Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Summer solstice set for Saturday at Stonehenge. Members of the community will celebrate the summer solstice at about 6 a.m. Saturday at Stonehenge on the campus of the University of Texas Permian Basin, 4901 East University Boulevard. There will be yoga with roaming yoga, coffee and pastry, UTPB Associate Professor of Art Chris Stanley said. Built around 2004, the Stonehenge at UTPB is a replica of the one built by the late Neolithic people about 3000 BC in England, according to the London Toolkit website. Quote, "There wouldn't be the first phase of what I call public art in Odessa if it hadn't been for Dick Gilliam and a lot of his acquaintances and colleagues who saw that art could enhance our community," Stanley said. Quote, "There was a little bit of pushback about building it, but I think overwhelmingly one of the things that Dick does when he's doing a project is he really works to get a consensus on an idea, and that's so rare today to find someone who can work with all the concerned parties. The concerns that people had, they believed were relevant, and Dick addressed those," Stanley added. He assembled a group of diverse people with different personalities who normally would never have been in the same place, and once that project was completed, they found an appreciation, fascination, and lifelong friendships with each other. Among those involved, in addition to Stanley and Gilliam, businessman and artist architect Larry Johnson, the late Connie Edwards, who owned Tech Stone Quarry, and land surveyor Aaron Burrell, who had worked for civil engineer John Landgraf, was involved in the creation of Stonehenge. Quote, "The first year that we had it actually up, there was a rainstorm that day, and we didn't really get to participate in any solstice activities, and so it was almost a whole calendar year later that we were actually able to see the first sunrise," Stanley recalled. Quote, "For me, if there were criticisms about us building it, and whatever and whomever made those criticisms, now you see those rocks everywhere. They show up in team photographs. They show up in engagement photos," Stanley said. Quote, "It literally brought people to campus that would have never maybe have gone to UTPB for anything. Walking trails were a big part of that too, but Stonehenge has become a thing where almost every day you see tourists come in and look at the rocks, so that as far as a public art project has been quite amazing," Stanley added. He said for him, the rocks have always represented the permanence of our continual persistence to improve as people. Quote, "The stabilization of culture coming from thousands of years in trial and error, the movement from hunter-gatherer cultures into stable civilizations required that monuments be erected so that communities could visualize the consistencies in the natural world. Knowledge about the longest day of the year, June 20th or 21st, and the shortest day of the year, December 21st, were essential to the survival of early agricultural organizations. I saw in Stonehenge a way to communicate the complex ideas to our students in a very physical way through engineering, art, history, and the social sciences," Stanley stated in a text message. Stanley said in a phone interview that he normally arrives at 5:30 a.m. or 5:45 a.m. to get the full effect of the sunrise. Quote, "If you don't show up at dawn, you don't get the full effect of what would have been like 4,000 years ago," Stanley said. He added that he didn't think the event would be strange this year, despite social distancing due to COVID-19. Quote, "This always marks a very special time of the year. We're all so busy, and we're all kind of in our own little worlds. I think this one's going to be very special because a lot of us haven't seen each other a lot. I've seen Dick a couple of times throughout all of this last 6 or so months, but it's not been the kind of quality time, he said. UTPB Communications Manager Alexa Dunson said the university is always happy to host the community on its campus. Quote, "The summer solstice has been celebrated at Stonehenge for years, and we're looking forward to continuing the tradition," Dunson stated in an email. Burrell said he has gone to the summer solstice in previous years. When he worked on the calculations for it, he said he made sure every stone was accounted for and in the correct spot. Quote, "I made it work astronomically like it does there in England 4,000 years ago. It was just a calendar for people. We just replicated that there on the UTPB campus and made it look exactly the way it looks today. Everything is 100% horizontally to scale," Burrell said.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, June 17th. Section A. Parent company of United Supermarkets commits $5 million to social justice. On June 11th, United Supermarkets parent company, Albertsons Companies, announced a $5 million donation to social justice organizations, as well as to those on the front lines of the fight for equality. The donations will be split among several different organizations and initiatives. A $2 million donation toward the social justice efforts of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and the National Urban League from the company and Albertsons Companies Foundation. A $1 million donation toward the company's African American Associate Resource Group's efforts to partner with local organizations who are working to support communities and neighborhood actions throughout our market areas, a $1 million reserve fund for social justice and diversity initiatives in the future, including community outreach, supplier diversity, and ongoing education. Another $1 million was donated to local initiatives in a division-specific area. United Family Management has already begun hosting what will be ongoing conversations with store and corporate teams to open communication channels on this very important topic. Through these conversations, leadership will be given the tools to address their own team members on these important issues. Sydney Hopper, president of the United Family, said, "Now more than ever, we want to foster an environment of open communication. As we traverse a historic time in the fight for equality, the United Family wants to do our part to improve our communities for everyone. That means creating a space where our team members and leadership can speak frankly about issues we are facing today." Likewise, Albertsons Companies President and CEO Vivek Sankaran said these goals of equality cannot be achieved without communication. "Courageous conversations can lead to bold actions and push the societal change we need," Sankaran said. "This dialogue requires collectives of friends, co-workers, students, community organizers, business leaders, and elected officials committed to building strategies to combat systemic racism and disparate treatment of people of color. We hope to be a catalyst for change and a resource for community organizations as our country works toward social justice." Valmarais State Park set to expand. Valmarais State Park is gaining some elbow room after a 643-acre land acquisition was recently completed by the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. This acquisition, which was 7 years in the making, will increase the size of the 108 acre park sevenfold to a total of 751 acres and increase future opportunities for nature trails, nature watching, and scenic overlooks. This is an exciting acquisition, not only from a conservation standpoint, but also the opportunity to increase recreational activity for our visitors, Rodney Franklin, Director of Texas State Parks, stated in a news release. Wildlife viewing and hiking are core activities at our parks, and providing more space for this is critically important, particularly at Balmoray State Park. I am very thankful for everyone involved in making this happen, as it will impact the park for years to come. Included in the acquisition is Carpenter's Hill, which was originally part of the historic landscape of the park when built by the Civilian Conservation Corps in the 1930s. Once the land is available for the public to access, visitors can enjoy scenic overlooks from Carpenter's Hill and explore new trails through the West Texas landscape. Access to this new land will not be available for some time, but TPWD will be sure to keep the public informed of new information regarding the site. This acquisition was purchased through federal land and water conservation funds and land sale proceeds. The Land and Water Conservation Fund was established by Congress in 1964 to safeguard our natural areas, water resources, and cultural heritage, and to provide recreation opportunities to all Americans. The fund invests earnings from offshore oil and gas leasing and provides grants to the states to help strengthen communities, invest in parks, preserve our history, and protect our local, state, and national collection of lands and waters. Work is still underway on multiple construction projects at Balmoray State Park, including removal and replacement of all existing septic systems, replacement of the chain link fence surrounding the pool to one made of wrought iron and limestone, reconstruction of the CCC pergola, completion of repairs to the campground and San Solomon courts, and renovations to the manager's house and concession building, the release said. Texas Parks and Wildlife spokesperson Stephanie Garcia said there is no master plan in the works for additional features to the park because the land won't be available for some time. The park is currently closed, and details about an expected reopening date will be announced later. We were really excited. It was 7 years in the making, so we're excited that we're able to bring this land to the people of Texas for them to enjoy the park, Garcia said. Chalk it up for the count. The U.S. Census Bureau, in partnership with the Permian Basin Apartment Association, will host a Chalk It Up for the Count sidewalk chalk art competition and virtual response challenge. It will run from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday through Saturday. The competition is for Midland apartment complexes in low response census tracts to encourage families with children 5 and under to self-respond to the census. Artists, participating residents, along with the apartment tracts will all be eligible to win in the following categories. Chalk It Up artist winner, 18 and younger, for each apartment tract, three $50 winners. Raffle winner from each call-in event, three $50 winners. Apartment complex that has the most call-ins. Pizza party for the winning complex, Chalk It Up for the Count, started with the artwork on June 13th. Selected apartment complexes promoted the children's chalk artwork and call-in events through their social media pages. Children up to 18 years of age and who live in the complex are encouraged to participate. Art must be posted on the apartment's website or on Facebook page. Judging will be held after each tract call-in event June 18th through the 20th. At least 4 million U.S. children under age 5 live in neighborhoods with a very high risk of undercounting young children in the 2020 census. Children under the age of 5, including babies, are among the most likely to be missed. Additionally, children living in renter-occupied housing and multi-unit structures are at a higher risk of being missed and not counted in the census. The 2020 census count impacts the federal funds that communities receive each year for programs and services such as maternal and child health programs, health insurance, hospitals, and child care, food assistance such as SNAP or WIC. Woman charged with assaulting ex-boyfriend with kitchen knife. An Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed a 21-year-old woman assaulted her ex-boyfriend with a kitchen knife. Victoria Eileen Lozano was charged with aggravated assault, bodily injury with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. May 21st, Luis Aceves Ramirez stated he was assaulted by his ex-girlfriend Lozano on May 17th. The affidavit detailed. The reported assault happened in the 1000 block of West Monahans Street. Ramirez reportedly told officers that he and Lozano broke up sometime prior to the assault, and on the day of the assault, Lozano entered his home to get some items. Ramirez had another woman inside the residence. He stated Lozano confronted him about the woman and an argument ensued. The affidavit stated. Ramirez stated Lozano was upset that she grabbed his phone and vehicle keys and exited the room. He stated once he reached the living room, he attempted to grab his keys and phone from Lozano. She punched him in the chest with a closed fist. Ramirez reportedly was able to get his keys and phone, and then Lozano bit him on the top of the left arm, which left a bruise. After Ramirez was bit, he stated Lozano entered the kitchen and grabbed a small knife. Ramirez stated he was able to grab it from her. He stated once he took the small knife that Lozano grabbed another larger knife. Ramirez reportedly detailed that Lozano pointed the knife at him and lunged at him while yelling and demanding he give her his phone. Ramirez stated he was cut on the left hand. A witness stated Lozano stabbed Ramirez with the knife during the argument and also saw Lozano threatening Ramirez with a knife. Another witness recorded the incident on their camera phone and turned it over to police. Lozano was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center June 11th, jail records show. She had one bond totaling $25,000 and posted bail the same day. Obituary and death notices for Wednesday, June 17th. Jesus Salazar. Jesus Salazar, 69 years old of Odessa, passed away Friday, June 12th. He was born December 25, 1950, in Coahuila, Mexico, to Inez Salazar and Eleuteria Vasquez of Del Rio. He is preceded in death by his parents, a grandson, Ryan R. Salazar, and a great-granddaughter, Catalaya Martinez. He is survived by his wife, Irene Aldaz Salazar, daughters, Tina Ponce, Priscilla Beltran of Odessa, Eleanor Juarez of Arizona, son Jesus Salazar Jr. of Odessa, 13 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren, 6 sisters, 2 brothers, and a host of nieces, nephews, and cousins. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, June 18th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church with Father Frank Chavez officiating. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in Odessa 2 section. Arrangements are entrusted to Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. please visit the website at www.martinezfuneral.com to give condolences and sign the guest book online. Death notices. Houston Odell Blanks. Shenandoah. Houston Odell Blanks, 95, of Spring, died Friday, June 12th in Shenandoah. A funeral service was scheduled for June 17th at Wesley United Methodist Church in Andrews, with Dr. Guy Crawford officiating. Arrangements are by McNett Funeral Home of Andrews. Paul Andrew Andy Campbell. Paul Andrew Andy Campbell, 60, of Odessa, died Tuesday, June 9th. A memorial service is scheduled for 9:30 a.m. Thursday, June 18th at Acres West Funeral Chapel, with Marcus Zuniga officiating. Patricia Lorraine Ott Kelly. Patricia Lorraine Ott Kelly, 80, of Odessa, died Saturday, June 13th. A funeral service is scheduled for 5 p.m. Thursday, June 18th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial will be held at 9 a.m. Friday, June 19th at Rest Haven Memorial Gardens in Midland. Guadalupe Lupe Morales Loera, Chihuahua, Mexico. Guadalupe Lupe Morales Loera, 60, of Odessa, died Friday, June 12th in Chihuahua. A funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, June 19th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at the Ector County Cemetery in Odessa 2 section. Celestino G. Tino Martinez. Celestino G. Tino Martinez, 92, of Kermit, died Saturday, June 13th. A funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. June 17th at Grace Temple Baptist Church in Kermit. Burial will follow at Kermit Cemetery. Arrangements are by Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Bertha Najera Lopez. Bertha Ann Najera Lopez was born in Odessa to Adolfo and Betty Najera, September 3, 1959. She married Margarito Lopez Jr. in 1980. Bertie is preceded in death by her mother, Betty Najera, sister Belinda Rodriguez, son-in-law Jeremy Ramirez, and brother-in-law Hector Ibarra. She is also preceded by her in-laws and many beloved aunts, uncles, and cousins. Bertie is survived by her husband, Margarito Lopez Jr., son Adrian Lopez, daughter Roseanne Lopez Ramirez, and son Anthony Lopez, and wife Sonia, sisters Nelda Ibarra, Velma Vasquez and husband Juan, Sandra Najera, and brother-in-law Raul Rodriguez, father Adolph Najera, and many grandchildren. Also one great-grandchild. Visitation will be from noon to 2 p.m. Wednesday at Martinez Funeral Home. Funeral service will be June 18th at 1 p.m. James Edward J. Cheney III. James J. Edward Cheney III, 43, of Midland, passed away June 13th. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, June 18th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home with Associate Minister Paula Brooks of First Christian Church of Midland officiating. For those wishing to attend the service, please be aware that masks are required due to family medical conditions. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. James, known as Jay, was born at RAF Laken Heath, England, July 28, 1976. He is preceded in death by his peepaw, Jim McWilliams, grandparents Lloyd and Sue Schenck, and Mama and Papa James Cheney Sr., and a great-grandmother, Faye Phillips. He is survived by his son, PFC Jared Cheney, daughter Kyla Cheney, daughter Addison Cheney, and mother Sarah, sister and brother-in-law Kimberly and Scott Bollinger, a nephew, his grandmother, and numerous uncles, aunts, cousins, and friends. Memorials may be given to the American Heart Association. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please visit his guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Marshall Johnson. Marshall W. Johnson passed away June 14th in Odessa. He is survived by his wife, Sarah Ortega Johnson, a stepson, John White, his daughter, Jessica Tarongo, son, Robert Johnson, daughter, Alicia Godfrey, 12 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren, his brothers, Dwayne and wife Margie Barnes, Bobby Jean and wife Tracy Poison, Tony and wife Pam Daniels, sister Bridget Tate, along with numerous nieces and nephews. Visitation will be held Wednesday, June 17th from 6 to 9 p.m., at Odessa Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held Thursday, June 18th at the Odessa Funeral Home Chapel. Due to COVID-19, masks will be required to attend visitation and services. Jerry Sue Parrish. Jerry Sue Parrish, 81, of Odessa, passed away April 21st. A celebration of life will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, June 20th at Highland United Methodist Church with the Reverend Charlie Johnson of the First United Methodist Church of Seminole officiating. Jerry was born in Sadler to Ted and Della Harshbarger, July 6, 1938. She married Hoyt Neal Parrish in 1958. In Sadler. Jerry is survived by her daughters Susan Kolb and husband Michael of Slidell, Louisiana, Monica Parrish of Odessa, Sherry Williamson of Odessa, her sisters Pat Eldridge of Sadler and Madge Eldridge of Rockwall, and 4 grandchildren. Memorials may be given to the University of Texas Permian Basin Champions Fund or Highland United Methodist Church. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. James Benjamin Lyons. James Benjamin Lyons III, Jim or T-Pimp to his family and friends, was born May 11, 1974, in Pasadena. He was called home in the presence of his family on May 20th following a motorcycle accident earlier in the month. He is survived by his parents, Jim and Christine Lyons of Honey Island, his wife Rebecca Crenshaw Lyons, son James Lyons IV, son Trent Lyons, grandson James Lyon V, sister Leslie Harris and husband Thomas of Odessa, and 2 nieces. Memorial services will be held at 9018 West 57th Street in Odessa, June 20th from 4 to 7 p.m., and also at his parents' home in Southeast Texas on July 18th. Memorials and condolences may be offered at those times.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 14th, 2020. Opinion. Letters to the editor. Odessa Street must be renamed. It is time for John Ben Shepherd Parkway to be renamed. As Texas Attorney General, Shepherd opposed and hindered the desegregation of Texas public schools in every way possible. He also considered his work opposing and limiting the operations of the NAACP in Texas to be one of his actions of which he was most proud. These opinions for which Shepherd fought were clearly racist. They have no place in 21st century Odessa. Odessa needs to change the name of the JBS Parkway. It might well be renamed the Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway so that Odessa would cease to be one of the few major cities in the United States without a street named for MLK. Norman Burt, Odessa. In defense of Jeff Davis, there was an interesting CBS 7 news broadcast recently about Jefferson Davis statues being removed, illegally, I should mention, where Jeff Davis County and Fort Davis, Texas were thrown into the mix. With this in mind, I'd like to give a brief history of Jefferson Davis. He was named after Thomas Jefferson, was a Mississippi farmer, an officer trained at West Point, a congressman, a senator, and the U.S. Secretary of War. He served as a colonel during the Mexican-American War and was a wounded national hero due to it. For all intents and purposes, these were the reasons Fort Davis and Jeff Davis County were named for him. For those who want to disparage his memory, he's often branded the President of the Confederacy. Now, getting back to the TV broadcast, CBS 7 had a former Fort Davis official and supposed historian on who made the odd remark that Jeff Davis statues should be removed, then defended Fort Davis by giving the impression it wasn't named for the President of the Confederacy, but named for the U.S. Secretary of War. Strange, being they are both the same person. In George Orwell's 1984, he labeled this sort of action as doublespeak. Doublespeak does seem to be the disturbing choice of many in the 21st century. It's known that during the American Civil War, many were forced to choose between family, home, and country. This occurred in Texas as well as in the North and the South. Jeff Davis was not the least among these tormented souls. To arbitrarily destroy the memory of him or any other historical figure due to the ignorant wishes of those who would abolish the U.S. as we know it is an act of anarchy. Anarchy does seem to be the new toxic play toy of U.S. millennials imparted by their radical gurus. As another historically disputed man said at the time of his death, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." James R. LeBlanc, Fort Davis. You can't rewrite history. Our history is our history, no matter how many statues are torn down. Not all history is pretty, but that doesn't mean we should try to erase it. When the Twin Towers were here, there were people that said we should delete the Twin Towers from movies so we wouldn't feel bad. Really? The other day, I read that Robert E. Lee and Andrew Stonewall Jackson were removed from the Hall of Great Americans in New York, and it sickened me. These two men were not only two of the most brilliant, respected generals of all time, but they were American generals. No matter which side they fought on, they deserve respect. Just because they fought for the Confederacy doesn't necessarily mean they supported slavery, and people should quit making the whole issue about slavery. Robert E. Lee only fought for the Confederacy because he would not fight against his home state of Virginia, and as Texans, I would think we could all respect that. In a country that makes too much of race and tries way too hard to be politically correct nowadays, in my opinion, are we really no better than the North Vietnamese who bulldozed the graveyards of South Vietnam, our allies, after they won the war? We live in a country where something called Black Lives Matter is acceptable instead of All Lives Matter. It's as if one group is saying we are not of you, but our lives matter, and we want to be treated just like everyone else, even while we differentiate between us. People, we are all Americans. Trying to erase history is not only obtuse, it's kind of pathetic. Michael Youngke, Odessa. Protests are very often riots. The First Amendment says, among other things, the people have the right to peaceably assemble. The key word in that phrase is peaceably. The recent so-called protests were not protests, and they were not peaceable. They were nothing but an excuse for criminals to rob, steal, and beat up on cops and civilians. They were nothing but looters and should have been shot on sight. The death of George Floyd was totally unjustified and done by a bad cop. But that does not in any way justify the riots and destruction that followed. I would be willing to bet that a lot of the protesters didn't even know George Floyd's name or who he was. It was just an opportunity to steal flat-screen TVs and Nike shoes. Nothing says we want justice like stealing a new 70-inch flat screen. Another thing that irks me is the way the lamestream media is portraying George Floyd. Yes, his death should not have occurred, but he was also not a fine, upstanding citizen. The media has been calling him a father, brother, neighborhood mentor, and athlete. He may have been all those things, but he also had a rather lengthy criminal record with convictions for armed robbery and cocaine possession. Yet the media is not mentioning this. They have made him a martyr for the Black Lives Matter movement. Yes, it is highly unfortunate when any unarmed person of any race is killed by a policeman. But according to official government figures, 57% of the people killed by police are white. Our cops do not go out every day just looking for a black person or any other race to kill. 99.9% of our cops do an amazing job under conditions that most people would not nor could not handle. Yet we are being asked to judge all policemen by the actions of an extremely small number of bad cops. This is so wrong. To reiterate, George Floyd should not have died, but the riots and violence that ensued were in no way justified. Peaceful protests are fine, but not mob rule. Thanks, Sandy Milner, Odessa.
Health and wellness. MCHD funding helps in physician recruitment. Russell Myers, Midland Health. Voting information. Early voting for the Midland County Hospital District sales tax election begins June 29. Election day is July 14. For details on voting locations and schedules, go to co.midland.tx.us. Midland County Hospital District provides more than $40 million per year in support of a wide variety of community health care services beyond the operation of Midland Memorial Hospital. These services are essential to the community's health, and for many years have been fully funded by federal Medicaid supplemental payments. These payments are projected to decline by $23 million in fiscal year 2021, with annual cuts reaching $38.4 million by fiscal year 2024. To replace the lost federal funding, MCHD has called for an election on July 14 to levy a tax on the sale of taxable items within the district at a rate not to exceed 0.25%, 0.25% of the sales price of the taxable item sold anywhere in Midland County. Should voters approve the ballot item, sales tax collections could provide a projected $28 million per year for the hospital district to use for community health care services funding. This is the fourth in a series of articles featuring vital community health care programs funded by MCHD. Physician practice support. For many years, Midland has struggled to recruit and retain the physicians needed to serve our community. In recent years, Midland Health has achieved a good deal of success in growing our complement of doctors, assisted by generous recruitment funding from Midland Development Corps. In some specialties, recruitment can require years of effort and tremendous upfront cost. Ongoing retention efforts, including financial support for many local practices, are essential to assure the recruitment effort pays off in the long term. Midland Health employs 43 physicians and 28 advanced practice providers, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants, who totaled more than 173,000 patient encounters in fiscal 2019. The majority of these providers work in practices that are unable to generate adequate professional fee revenue to support all of their costs, including physician compensation that must be maintained at the upper end of the market to assure our ability to recruit and retain those doctors. Professional fee collections are limited by our insistence that employed physicians accept Medicare and Medicaid patients where applicable. Patients participating in these programs often struggle to find a provider who will accept their coverage because these programs typically pay much less than most commercial insurance plans for the same services. Some particularly crucial specialties require substantial support to keep that service available in Midland. For example, infectious disease specialists have come and gone over the years, and we recently went more than a year with just one provider serving the entire region. In the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, this particular specialty has been vital to our efforts to care for our community's sickest patients, and we were fortunate to successfully recruit an experienced ID specialist late last year. Like most internal medicine subspecialties, ID is very poorly reimbursed by Medicare and other payers. So far this year, professional fee collections in this practice are not even covering basic practice overhead, much less the physician's compensation. Without Midland Health's financial support, Midland simply would not have an ID physician. Similar financial support is necessary in several other specialties where professional fees simply do not cover costs. These include critical care, hospital medicine, hospitalists, neurology, and anesthesiology. Midland Health's financial support makes it possible to recruit and retain doctors that our community simply could not attract and keep otherwise. In fiscal 2019, we provided funding to more than 200 physicians in our community, representing approximately 75% of all Midland doctors. MCHD has proposed a 0.25% sales tax to replace lost federal funding and assure our ability to continue providing critical financial support to local physicians and advanced practice providers. Russell Myers is president and CEO of Midland Health. Personal responsibility still needed during pandemic, by Dr. Summer Merritt. Protect our frontline. COVID-19 case counts, percent positive rates, and hospitalization rates in Texas continue to climb. Cases in Midland have gone up exponentially since Memorial Day weekend, as expected. People have been socializing more, in larger groups, and have understandably grown fatigued from being cautious. The hospital census remains steady, which is good news, yet also to be expected. Typically, hospital census counts don't increase until 8 to 10 days post-infection. The cytokine storm event in COVID-19 can occur 8 to 10 days post-infection and is characterized by patients developing increased shortness of breath and decreased oxygen saturations, thus requiring hospitalization. The majority of recent infections have been in younger individuals. Though people younger than 65 are much less likely to die from COVID-19, they can get sick enough from the disease to require hospitalization, according to a report published in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report in late March. Nearly 40% of people hospitalized for COVID-19 between mid-February and mid-March were between the ages of 20 and 54. Drilling further down by age, MMWR reported that 20% of hospitalized patients and 12% of COVID-19 patients in ICUs were between 20 and 44. A Business Insider news story from last month documented two hairstylists in Missouri who had COVID-19 and continued to work while they had symptoms. Both wore masks and all their clients wore masks. Contact tracers determined that none of their clients were infected. This shows the power of masks in preventing transmission and infection with COVID-19. It is estimated that if 60% of the population wore masks, the pandemic would be stopped. Texans were effective at flattening the curve early in the course of the pandemic. It brought hospitals, physicians, time to better prepare. Now that the state has reopened, each city and hospital system will have to self-regulate. It is good to remain mindful that West Texas has a finite number of healthcare workers. Personal responsibility, as addressed by state and community leaders, is well explained in the Texas Monthly article on its website, Texas Has Shifted to an It's Your Responsibility Pandemic Plan. Herd immunity has been discussed frequently in the news. Herd immunity is achieved by allowing a virus or bacteria to infect 40-60% of a population or by vaccination against the specific disease. With COVID-19, this would occur when regulations such as masks, limiting group sizes, and social distancing policies are not enforced, so that the majority of the population becomes infected. This results in the population becoming immune to a disease, and then the disease theoretically dies out. Think chickenpox parties. Sometimes, when a contagious disease is not especially deadly, this is a good option. Herd immunity in Midland would look like this. Population 150,000, 40% of total population, 60,000 infections, 60% of total population, 90,000 infections. 60,000 to 90,000 infections times 5.5% case fatality rate, 3,300 to 4,950 deaths. Case fatality rate is the number of deaths divided by the total number of confirmed cases. In the U.S., it is 5.5% according to Johns Hopkins. This is doubtfully a palatable result for any West Texan. Sweden tried to achieve herd immunity, but its lead epidemiologist has since stated this was a mistake, as their case fatality rate has been the highest in the world, according to LiveScience.com. Please continue to follow CDC and the state's recommendations of wearing a mask when in public spaces, especially indoors. Maintain 6 feet of separation from those outside of your immediate family, quarantine bubble, practice frequent and thorough hand washing, keep to socializing in small groups and outdoors if possible. Masks aren't comfortable. They are hot and fog up your glasses. Sometimes we all have to tolerate a minimal inconvenience or discomfort to stop a much bigger problem from developing. Osteoarthritis pain can be managed. Dr. Adenike Esho, Midland Health. My hands look so crooked. What is causing this? Can it be reversed? She asked as she looked at me, and I could sense her disquietude. I looked at her with an understanding smile. She was one of my many patients with the same concern asked in different ways. What is osteoarthritis? Can it be reversed? Should I resign myself to a future of constant pain and deformity? Osteoarthritis is a wear and tear disease of the joint articular cartilage and is the most common joint disorder found in individuals over 50. Risk factors include age, obesity, gender, and trauma. It can affect joints in the hands, knees, feet, and hips, just to name a few, and is associated with substantial morbidity, disease. It is the leading cause of lower extremity disability, especially in older adults, and is associated with reduced quality of life and high health care costs. Most patients will have pain and some with already visible deformities. Although we currently do not have treatments to regenerate damaged articular cartilage, significant strides have been made in managing a patient's symptoms and preventing loss of function. There are different interventions that can help reduce pain and improve joint function. I typically advise patients to start with lifestyle modifications. For those who are overweight, some studies have shown losing up to 10% of body weight is associated with reduced pain and improved joint function, particularly for knee osteoarthritis. Physical therapy is also very essential to help strengthen muscles around the joint and improve function. Medications are available to address a patient's pain, and selection would depend on the patient's level of pain, medication tolerability, and comorbid conditions. There are several analgesics available over the counter, but it is imperative your healthcare provider is informed first before taking over-the-counter medications, because even the mildest analgesics can be dangerous if used in the wrong patient. Overall prognosis for osteoarthritis is good with appropriate treatment, and I was happy to explain to my patient what this disease is and the different interventions available to help maximize her quality of life.
Vitamin D effect on immunity. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Wednesday, June 17th. Dear Dr. Roach, My wife and I are 74 and in good health. Recently, I started reading about vitamin D and its effect on the immune system. We both had a vitamin D blood test for the first time ever, despite having almost yearly blood tests for the past 40 years. My level was 32 nanograms per millimeter, and hers was 22. She is now taking 50,000 IU of vitamin D weekly on doctor's orders. Her blood level is considered insufficient, and mine is barely over the optimum level, although the optimal extends to 100 nanograms. We have both taken multivitamins for years. How did we get so low? And are our immune systems compromised? What level should we be trying to achieve? Answer. Vitamin D has many effects on different issues of the body, but the data showing definitive benefit to treatment mostly comes from its effect on bone. Most of the body's immune cells have the receptor for vitamin D, but evidence that treatment of low vitamin D improves immune function is scant. Randomized trials have examined the effect of vitamin D on upper respiratory infections and tuberculosis, but the benefit was limited to people with very low vitamin D levels, less than 10 nanograms per milliliter. Studies are ongoing to evaluate the effect of vitamin D supplementation on infection in general, but since very low levels should be treated anyway from the standpoint of bones, there is currently no indication to treat low vitamin D solely in order to prevent or treat infection. The target level of vitamin D remains controversial. Most experts recommend levels between 20 and 50, which is usually achievable with vitamin D3 doses of 800 to 2,000 IU daily. I prefer daily to weekly dosing.
Dear Abby, wife stunned to discover husband's weighty fetish. Dear Abby, my husband and I married 2 years ago. A year later, we welcomed our first child. I never imagined I would ever want a divorce. Well, I found out early this year that my husband has a fantasy, about bigger women. He actually said it. He is a feeder. He has purchased books related to these things and watches videos and reads stories about it while sitting next to me on the couch. It turns him on. He has asked me to consider gaining weight. I told him he needs help. I made an appointment for him to see a therapist and am forcing him to go. I don't know how to handle this bomb he dropped on me. I don't know how to be with someone who has such a strong impulse. I hate to feel at fault for walking away and breaking up our family, but I can't go along with this and risk my health. I also don't know how to live apart from him. Any help is appreciated. Wife of a feeder. Dear wife, your husband should have discussed this with you before you married. Gaining weight to feed your husband's fetish would not be healthy for you physically or, feeling as you do, emotionally. Because you already have a licensed mental health professional in your database, schedule an appointment for yourself to help you rationally decide what you need to do. Can your husband be content to have his fantasy and not involve you? You may not want to feel at fault for walking away, but you aren't going to change him, and your first responsibility must be to maintain your health so you can parent your child to adulthood. Dear Abby, this has been weighing on me for a long time. A guy I've known for years receives tons of food from a food pantry his sister runs. It sickens me because he's financially set. He brags to me about never ever having to buy groceries again. I think about the children and families who are in need of food during these terrible times. He is the worst kind of cheapskate and doesn't like spending money on anything. Obviously, if his sister is allowing this, she's doing the same thing. I told him he should be ashamed of himself for taking advantage of this program. His response was that he served our country, so he's entitled. He was dishonorably discharged after 7 months. He truly feels the food is owed to him. This has been bothering me for a long time, and to be honest, I wish he had never told me. Disgusted in Connecticut. Dear Disgusted, and your question is? Those two appear to have no conscience. Contact the head of the organization that sponsors the food bank and tell the person what you have written to me. I don't think I'm being too harsh to point out that Sissy is guilty of theft by funneling food to her brother and preventing a needy family from having it. Shameless. Dear Abby, is it possible to be in love with someone who is incarcerated? Romantic in Texas. Dear Romantic, yes. However, it depends upon the length of the relationship and whether you met the person before he or she was incarcerated. If you knew the person before, it is possible. However, if your relationship began while he or she was serving time, it is extremely important that you verify anything you are being told and refrain from sending the person money. Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Gemini and a moon in Taurus. Happy birthday for Wednesday, June 17, 2020. Persuasive and intent on reaching your goals, you stop at nothing to make this year a success. Your physicality, so different from other Geminis, gifts you with spatial awareness. If single, you have varied and interesting relationships, but will not settle down until you decide to. If attached, you are busy around the home front as you and your partner create a beautiful life together. Aries appreciates your intensity and can match it. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Debts or other obligations that have held you back finally get under control today. You are about to be free to progress more rapidly. Be aware of repeating financial patterns, good or bad. Keep a positive attitude. Tonight, a sibling or neighbor calls for help. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Today finds you very motivated. You are bursting with enthusiasm about new projects. Do release stress, however. Step back and regroup if you feel a tinge of anger. Look within to discover what direction you truly want to take. Tonight, read between the lines. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 3 stars. Help arrives when least expected and most needed, for angels can come in the form of helpful friends or professional consultants. Do not let social situations create any awkwardness at work. Your loyalties and attachments are in flux. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Surprises occur involving certain friendships. However, even if your social life is slightly awry, feel free to go ahead and cement plans related to travel or long-distance matters. Group affiliations will be deepened. Tonight, avoid power struggles with ruthless and manipulative individuals. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 2 stars. An unexpected change of plans and various obstacles are likely, so have alternate plans and remain flexible. Financial plans related to business also may be affected. There will be minor upsets in social plans, particularly those connected with career endeavors. Tonight, relax. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Nervous tension may temporarily take hold. Do not be too impulsive. Things may not work out as planned. A business venture or other long-term plans, however, are worked out through the help of long-distance friends who are far away. Tonight, you give thanks. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Today brings opportunities to enhance your general financial outlook. For some, this will be in the form of receiving money owed. Those involved in health, research, or technical careers are favored. Some may even gain through a partner's new job. Tonight, vivid daydreams. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. Serious discussions with partners fare well when deep insights are gleaned into prior negative behaviors. However, the well-being vanishes if there is an unwillingness to face facts. You get the go-ahead for a new work project. Tonight, a powerful friend may change your life considerably. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. You experience more than your average number of frustrations at work. A little compromise and patience for others' bad moods will help. You make the acquaintance of someone quite charming. Tonight, you realize you have fewer personal problems than your associates. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. Creative ideas abound today, and some of them could lead to money. If working around the home, take extra safety precautions when tiredness or inattentiveness could lead to messes. You will experience some irritability. Tonight, romantic opportunities come your way. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 2 stars. The display of emotionalism going on around you could drive you a little crazy. Fortunately, it is short-lived. Avoid the family squabbles that are likely to take place. Commitments formed could be lasting. Tonight, increased responsibilities involving children. Be flexible. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Angry words actually clear the air once and for all. Major life changes and transitions are happening. View this period as an opportunity for change and do not be afraid. You are entering into a new realm of existence, experiencing a virtual rebirth. Tonight, celebrate. Born today, composer Igor Stravinsky, 1882, artist M. C. Escher, 1898, tennis player Venus Williams, 1980.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.